All right. Well, good morning, everyone. It is a little after 9:05 a.m. Thursday, May 26, 2022. This is a Public Service Commission meeting in our hearing room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol, Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the commission. The purpose of this meeting is to conduct a public hearing on proposed changes to the commission's administrative rules. If an interested person would like to provide remote input during the hearing, please call 701-328-4081 to be placed on the list. Hopefully that number is also published on our website if people are listening remotely, or could we do that, Matt? Could we flash that up on the screen so that if anybody is listening remotely, do you need that number again? 328-4081. So that then you'd be placed on a list and we will get to you when the time is right. With me today are Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Do either of you have any comments before we get started?
I do not.
Okay. The rules case being heard today is case number PU-22-163. The purpose of the new chapter 6909-12 is to guide the process of resource planning and annual cybersecurity reporting for investor-owned utilities in the state. The proposed rulemaking provides further clarification for the implementation of Senate Bill 2313, which was enacted during the most recent legislative session. The Commission has scheduled this public hearing to allow everyone the opportunity to submit information or comments concerning the adoption of proposed changes to the North Dakota Admin Code. All comments received at this public hearing will be considered by the Commission together with all other written comments received. Although the notice provides that written comments may be submitted until the close of business on June 6th, the Commission is extending the comment period through June 16th of 2022. The Public Service Commission will consider all comments received and address the comments in its written decision. Anyone may request a copy of the decision and it will be provided via email or regular mail. The decision and all other filings in this case will also be available on the Commission's website. That's psc.nd.gov. This hearing is being broadcast over the internet and is also being electronically recorded. Everyone will be given the opportunity to speak. Please identify yourself for the record before you speak and speak slowly and clearly. If you have a prepared statement or written copy, would be appreciated and it would be helpful. I will now open the hearing for comments. Does anyone wish to testify on case number PU-22-163 concerning the proposed rules? We have some staff here.
Adam Renfant with staff would like to testify.
Okay. Thank you, Adam.
Hello, Commissioners. My name is Adam Renfant. I'm a public utility analyst with PSC. The purpose of my testimony is to explain and provide support for a new chapter to North Dakota Administrative Code 69-09-12 regarding resource plans and cybersecurity. The purpose of this new chapter is to guide the process of resource planning and annual cybersecurity reporting for investor-owned utilities in the state. The proposed rulemaking provides further clarification for the implementation of Senate Bill 2313 enacted during the most recent legislative session. The proposed resource planning rules include a requirement that an investor-owned utility must file a resource plan on a three-year cycle that would identify the resources to meet its forecasted capacity and energy needs over a horizon of at least 15 years. Such a requirement would provide a forward-looking and proactive opportunity for the Commission to assess and influence a utility's plan for power plant additions and retirements and a utility's plan for providing reliable and resilient electric service. The proposed resource planning rules include a requirement that each utility shall identify a mix of supply and demand side resources that would compromise a North Dakota preferred resource plan. Such resources would be selected after weighing several scenarios against one another and analyzing each one using a variety of sensitivities. The rules require that such a plan would be the least cost plan for providing adequate, safe, and reliable electric service consistent with North Dakota energy policy. The proposed rules also require each utility to consider several types of generation along with the additional transmission facilities necessitated by such generation. Upon request of utility, the Commission may approve, reject, or modify the resource plan, and if the Commission were to make such a determination, the decision could be presented as prima facie evidence in other proceedings. The proposed resource planning rules also require a utility to assess new technologies, the availability of natural gas in meeting electricity demand, the ability to maintain system resilience and reliability, and opportunity to develop North Dakota's energy infrastructure. Furthermore, the rules require the utility to assess the reliability and resilience of its resources during extreme weather events and correlated outages of natural gas units. The proposed resource planning rules would allow the Commission to determine the benefits and costs a resource plan offers ratepayers over several years, to participate in a utility's resource planning efforts that operate across several state jurisdictions, and to engage each utility in development of investment and retirement plans that are made years in advance. Also included is a proposed rule requiring each utility to meet with the Commission annually to report on their cybersecurity preparedness. The report would detail information related to processes and procedures used to inform management of cybersecurity risks, activities to monitor, detect, and analyze cybersecurity threats, protections in place to secure informational and operational systems, and plans to limit potential damage while maintaining business continuity. The utility would deliver the report to the Commission in a closed meeting unless the Commission orders otherwise. This concludes my testimony, and I would be happy to answer any questions at this time. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Adam. For starters, can you provide any compare or contrast to how these requirements relate to what specifically Minnesota, South Dakota, or Montana require for their IRP? Generally, I mean, not like to the nitty-gritty details, but.
Right, so I would say, by and large, you know, I looked at all three of them, and I would say they are consistent. I don't think any of these three plans would give any one utility heartburn. We did have stakeholder discussions with them, so we kind of fleshed out some of those concerns early on in the process of developing these administrative rules.
Can you tell me just what does Minnesota have in, like, what is their IRP process and what is South Dakota's and Montana's, if they have one or don't, or if they approve it or don't approve it? What are those requirements in the other states?
So Minnesota, in terms of, like Excel versus MDU versus Otter Tail, are we talking about?
Well, just the states. What does the state require?
Oh, I'm not sure what South Dakota requires. And, you know, I'm not an expert on Minnesota. I know generally the process. You know, they have much, like in Minnesota, it's much more onerous and much more lengthy because you have quite a few different stakeholders involved. So for this last, for Excel's last IRP, you know, it started in 2019,
yeah,
and had several iterations.
So I guess just generally, like Minnesota requires each of the utilities to file an IRP,
yeah,
and have it approved.
And then, yeah, and then the commission, you know, the staff will have a number of, they'll present the commission with a number of, several different options to follow, and then
sure,
they'll approve the IRP after after that submission.
And then South Dakota, what's their process? Do they have one at all?
You know, I'm not sure. Not that I've seen. I haven't seen any proceedings on how they deal with IRPs.
Okay. And then Montana?
Yeah, in Montana, I don't know. Anything.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's John Hsu, and South Dakota and Montana both do have IRP processes, but for the sake of this proceeding, we'd be happy to follow up and provide some written comments about what type of proceedings they have for your review after this hearing.
Okay, that would be great. Can you characterize the concerns that the companies had when you were meeting with them? I know we'll hear from some of them, but what sort of feedback did they have in developing this?
I'm trying to, there were a couple concerns about definitions that were just, I would call semantic concerns. There was also a concern that about identification of individual transmission facilities, and that may have been and we cleared that up. Maybe there's some confusion about, you know, when you place a generation and cite a generation somewhere, a lot of times they're generic assumptions, right? They could just be a placeholder. In other words, you don't know where it's going to go, so mm-hmm. It's tough to find, tough to cite the generation and the cost of generation. However, most of these IRP filings, it's the interconnection costs are, you know, very high level estimates, because mm-hmm. You can't really get a good grasp on it, just because it's dependent on where you are in the queue, what kind of backbone will be built out in terms of long range transmission planning, and where that all fits in terms of timing.
Okay. So it wasn't. It was very kind of specific stuff that they
Yeah, it was very specific, yeah.
Okay. And then do you...
You know, one of the other concerns I'd say generally is what the utilities were looking for is how this fit into our current process, because right now we've just been operating on an ADP process, an Advanced Determination mm-hmm. Prudence process. So in other words, are we just going to use this historically as we've done, just looking at it historically, not doing anything? Or are we actually going to use it such that we're going to make a determination, and that determination can therefore be maybe entered into other proceedings? So I think that's one of
the... And it's the latter, correct, based on what you...
Yeah, so it is the latter. So then we introduce some flexibility there. If the commission so desires to approve it, however, you know, that would be a commission preference. So that'd be open to the commission.
And we can do that on a case by case basis, yeah. Or even a resource by resource basis within the plans. Like, say we have enough information about this resource, we can determine this to be prudent now. We don't have enough on these five things, so we're not making a decision on that. Do we have that kind of flexibility within the plans?
I would say it would be difficult, since this is more of an integrated approach. You know, that might be more,
sure.
Yeah. So, you know, just kind of picking one out, like one resource out of the mix could have ramifications mm-hmm. for how that fits into their broader portfolio.
Yeah.
But in that case, it sounds like if we did get to that point, that we can ask them for more scenarios or dig in somewhere, because, you know, if we want to make a determination on one resource, and the question would be, you know, maybe there's something else that's missing in the record that they could supplement it with.
Sure. All right, so we might just need to go through a couple of these and see how what, you know, what we have and how the information flows before we can really know how that's.
Right. I think this process is just largely iterating.
Yeah.
So we get something and then we iterate. We see what we like and what we don't like. And then, you know, we iterate. We have them iterate again.
Yeah. You guys jump in if you've got questions. I've got one more, but go ahead.
Do you want to finish?
No. Mine is a little bit specific. So. Okay. Sure.
Just to be clear, so that someone isn't sitting around with heartburn about maybe being left out of the stakeholder discussions, this is just for the investor-owned utilities, not the cooperatives, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then, and there are three in the
right.
jurisdiction.
Correct.
Correct. And so when I'm just reflecting back to where we've come since the last legislative session when this IRP process was approved and getting to this point. I'm not sure where I got this. It's been my understanding that the thought was that we'd probably like to see one of these each year from one company so that we don't get three of them dropped on us all at once. So is that how you're planning for this to work, that they would be in a cycle and we would kind of have one each year?
It is, well, every 3 years is how it's currently written, how the rules are currently proposed. Now, we have a discretion on when to start that cycle because the utilities will tell you that their preference would be to kind of align it with their current processes that operate in, let's say, Minnesota or South Dakota or Montana. So that would be their preference. So where that starting point is, we have the discretion to say, okay, when do we wanna start that cycle?
Okay, so we do have some flexibility there.
Yeah.
And are you creating in these rules any deadlines, or how long do we have to work on it, other than the fact that we've probably got another one coming up?
There are no deadlines specified. Okay. I think that'll be kind of something as we work through the process. And that is, like, if you take a look at, like, Minnesota, they've got quite a few stakeholders. You know, they're constantly having to ask for requests for extensions. So even though we're just starting out and, you know, there could be delays and we're not sure of a schedule from the get-go, you know, I would say that is kind of within keeping with how other states handle their processes too, just because of the number of stakeholder concerns.
Based on what I get out of reading these rules, though, there should be no need for requests for extension because I don't really see any deadlines. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. I don't know if we could do that by an order, to say if we order it, if we order it, we could probably say, okay, file it by such and such a date.
Sure.
So we could probably set a date at that point, and that's maybe kind of what we would probably do at that point. So there would be a date in the order now that I'm thinking about.
And that's what I was hopeful how this was being planned, because until we've done a few of these, I just don't think we can really know to say something has to happen after 4 months and something else has to happen by 2 months after that. Or, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then on page 4, it's a carryover from section 2, but then subsection H, and this is what the resource plan must include.
Mm-hmm.
And H, there's any other information as may be requested by the commission. So that gives us quite a bit of flexibility in what we ask for. In your stakeholder discussions, was there any amount of pushback on that?
No pushback.
So there is an understanding that there will be some flexibility to explore things here.
Yep. And just looking at other dockets, yeah, these are pretty extensive proceedings in a lot of cases with a lot of data requests.
So if someone came in and had something in their resource plan to provide energy from a certain source or something like that, and we had questions on, for example, their supply chain issues with actually accomplishing that, mm-hmm. we could explore into those kinds of things as well.
Definitely.
I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Sherry?
Yes, I have a question. Commissioner Crisman touched on the resource plan, what it must include, but then I'm going to go back to the first page. It says an electric public utility must file a resource plan on a 3-year cycle, and then the public utility may file a supplement on the plan with necessary updates, may, mm-hmm. and shall file a supplement upon the commission request. During that, did you guys discuss when it may, a submission of that, an addendum to the plan may be required? Because mm-hmm. It gives them may file, mm-hmm. you know, but we're pretty specific on what the plan must include.
Mm-hmm.
So what would cause a submission? Because there could be some big changes within the 3-year.
Yeah. So then what could cause changes? You know, if there was a new regulatory rule, or if the regulatory rule was affected earlier than had expected. Mr. Crisman mentioned the supply chain, mm-hmm. so that was a big one in terms of building solar plants are being delayed because of supply chain issues and lawsuits happening with U.S. manufacturers. That could be another one. There could be a substantial amount of load added, like let's say Otter Tail and the large Bitcoin operation that they added.
So do you feel the IOUs would submit a supplement to their...
Say that again.
Do you feel they would submit a supplement plan at that time? You know, well, it's discretionary may.
Yeah. We could... I think, Jack, we could order them to file another supplement, couldn't we?
The administrative rules do allow us to require them to file a supplement if we find that there's a change to any of these sensitivities or assumptions or anything else that may impact the resource plan. Adam, in your experience in the past with integrated resource plans that you've reviewed, when there have been a change in the sensitivities or assumptions, has the company generally come back and supplemented their resource plan?
Yeah, yes, they have.
Thank you.
I know Randy has another question. I have a couple more. So I'll jump in here with mine. So in our plans, we'll do the simple one first. We require them to... on number one under the resource plan attributes on page two, must identify the resources needed to meet the forecasted capacity and energy needs, including a reserve requirement. Is there any value in specifying what that reserve requirement should be, or are we sort of deferring to whatever reserve requirement they will be required to meet for MISO?
I think we're keeping it open right now. I think, you know, they would have to meet their MISO reserve requirements just as part of a market participant. However, how they model it and whether we have some kind of concerns on it, we could dig into that,
sure.
You know, based on kind of what we see.
Okay.
So if we want, if the commission so desired to have a more onerous requirement that is under the state's purview.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm just kind of thinking about one thing I know Indiana has done recently, and this could maybe fit within the IRP. It might be something separate. It probably warrants talking with the utilities, but they require the utilities to file with them, I believe, how they're meeting their annual reserve requirement, like their plan for meeting the planning reserve margin. And then they get to see that every year. And so that's just, as I've heard them talk about it, it might be, I'm not saying we don't already know that information, maybe we do, but it might be a valuable information for us to get on a regular basis, especially as we have more and more variables in the mix and less certainty on the grid in general. So, and I don't know that that fits necessarily within here or if it's something we could just request on a regular basis anyway. Randy, did you have something else?
I did. The subsection 5 that gets into the cybersecurity, even though it's in the same chapter of the administrative rules, if this gets approved, and those are going to be separate filings, correct?
Correct.
So, like the IRPs, presumably sometimes, at least on the ones we really want to explore, we might hire consultants and some information would be shared and stuff, but the cybersecurity ones are going to be completely separate from that, and our discussions will be allowed to be in non-public settings.
Yep.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yep.
And then also to that point, we list all the things in the report, but number one says the electric public utility shall meet with the commission annually to report on, so that infers that there isn't a paper report that necessarily will be filed and kept by the commission.
Right.
Because our intention is not to do that.
Not yet. Not to have paper filings.
Right. Yeah. All right. And then did you have quite a lot of conversations with the utilities on the cybersecurity reporting as well, or is this kind of a first crack on their feedback?
I haven't had, a huge amount of, back and forth on cybersecurity with them, so.
All right. Then I have one other issue on the IRPs, and this is maybe a little bit, quote unquote, out there.
Okay. We like those, right?
But we forget where it is. We basically say, the North Dakota preferred plan must not select resources based on carbon costs, greenhouse gas goals, renewable energy standards, emission goals, or other externalities. And I know we have to spell that out, and I appreciate that. As we continue down this path of everybody else, not everybody else, but many others going just the opposite of that and deriving changes based on CO2 reductions, there's a part of me that wants to ask the utilities to report on, not that we're going to base our decisions on, the CO2 impacts of each of the resources, but to request information on their CO2 reductions so we have that, and then can also ask for information that I feel is being left out of the conversation, which is the broader CO2 footprint implications of some of the new technologies, like battery development, we are assuming that that's an overall net reduction in CO2. But those calculations don't consider the impact of the mining or the transportation of all those, all of that material from halfway across the globe. And so I have real questions as to whether or not we really even, if you consider that, if we're even ahead. So I guess, I mean, maybe that's something that, because it's kind of coming in at the 11th hour, maybe it's too late for this iteration. I just want to throw that out there for you guys to think about, though, that we have an opportunity to ask for full quantification of some of this stuff that might be helpful for us in North Dakota's approach for CO2 mitigation, which we are pursuing in a different, on a different path.
Mm-hmm.
So if either of you have thoughts on that now, I'd be open to hearing them.
Adam, as part of this integrated resource planning, if that is information that we'd like to request, could we request the company provide that information?
We could.
And does that include the lifetime cost carbon for a specific generational resource, at least an estimate or a modeling of that?
Yes, it would. They do it by a dollar per metric ton basis.
Okay.
So we could do that based on their generation.
And do you think that includes the full life cycle, or is that just...
That would not include, like, the supply chain that you mentioned?
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't include it.
But, Adam, there are evaluations out there to the total cost of carbon for generation resources that exist.
Yeah, we could try to dig some of those up. I'm sure there are out there. I haven't looked at them in quite some time.
I guess is whether it's part of the integrated resource planning or it's a separate filing, that is information we could probably request, though, isn't it?
Right, yep. Okay. Yep. Good.
Just debating on whether we should start requiring that on resources on a routine basis, fossil and renewable. And I'm just thinking about this, and I welcome colleagues to think about it and respond as well. But if we're doing these things for a very specific goal, and I feel like we're not looking at the whole picture. We mean the industry as a whole nationwide. Mm-hmm. So.
I think what we see just from watching the news, you know, investment companies, utility companies, resource companies, you can almost they just come up with studies to get to any end they're seeking to do, because then, you know, you're not only, if you're going to do all that, somehow or another, you need to come up with a strategy to calculate all that. But then in fairness, I suppose you have to calculate the carbon or other emission impacts of not doing it, which means, okay, then that person doesn't have a job, so what else do they do in the meantime? And, you know, you can just keep adding so many things. I don't know that there ever is an end final answer. So it's certainly an interesting topic to explore. I just don't know how you ever get to an end.
Well, yeah. Certainly none of this stuff comes to light if people don't start requesting.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I'm exploring.
And I'm just curious, in your stakeholder meetings, did any of this come up as a talking point for the resource plan? Because I feel that they're out there, they're working with it on a daily basis and stuff. So I'm just curious, was it discussed at all in the stakeholder?
Yeah,
or
so
in your discussions?
Yeah, it was discussed. And, you know, we do have a, let's see, what number is it? On number 7 on page 2. So they can file alternative scenarios with various schedules and proposals for meeting various emission targets, and we would expect they would
submit that information under that.
Yeah. So then it would provide a comparison point.
That's good. Okay. I don't have any more questions for you guys, do either of you?
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask a couple of follow-ups. Yeah, sure. Adam, so the utilities are required to provide the integrated resource plans on a 3-year cycle, right?
Right.
And the commission by order will provide the first time that they, the initial date of them filing an integrated resource plan.
Right.
And how long do you anticipate investigation by staff into an integrated resource plan to take? How long do you think that will take?
It would depend on the utility, sure. And I think that'd be a function of the number of stakeholders that are involved in their other jurisdictions. Because one utility might have several, 20 stakeholders that are providing data requests and having the company respin various scenarios and models. And what happens out of that process is that you get a brand new IRP, basically, right? And
sure.
Then you might get another one.
But upon them providing a North Dakota integrated resource plan, and once that's been provided to us in application, how long do you think it'll take staff to review integrated resource plan through an investigation?
I would say 9 months, maybe. I would say 9 months.
Okay.
Maybe 9 months to a year, depending on what, because there could be something that changed from another jurisdiction. Is why that, might 1 year might sound like a lot.
Right, but I guess the change in the other jurisdiction likely would not impact our investigation unless there is a large change in assumptions or sensitivities, right? For the North Dakota preferred plan.
Right, yeah, I could see that, yeah. So, yeah, I would say maybe 9 months.
For the North Dakota review?
For the North Dakota plan, yeah.
Just to review it?
Yeah, for the
first time. Or
maybe even
beginning to end.
Maybe six. Yeah, beginning to end, I would say.
I see.
Yeah.
So if we broke it down, like 6 months for you guys to review it, and then
another 3 months.
3 months to go back and forth with us. It's the goal of wrapping it up within a year.
Yeah, maybe even 5 months for review. And then, 4 months for back and forth. So I'd say nine months for the entire process. Yeah.
So absent changes, major changes that would require supplements to the integrated resource plan, Adam, do you think that we would be able to wrap up the entire process for a utility within the 3-year cycle?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Right, so Jack, to that point, what I'm hearing you go to, and I think this is what Randy was getting at, which I really appreciate, you plan on trying to get each utility on a 1-year cycle, we go through it in a year, then they come back up 3 years later. And so, because we have three utilities and each one is every 3 years has to go, we get through the cycle with one a year and then repeat it.
I guess to answer Commissioner Crispin's question about staggering for review, the answer would be, we provide the flexibility to stagger the proceedings if that is the prerogative of the commission.
I think it makes good sense. I know that might be a little bit challenging to get the cycle going, especially if they have a different cycle with one of the other jurisdictions, but that would be the best goal, I think, for managing staff time.
And the process does allow for variances, too, for specific changes as well. But we can address that on an ongoing basis.
I also think it's really important that we sort of get a timeline down and stick to it so that it doesn't drag out for years upon years.
Sure.
Just because that happens in other jurisdictions doesn't mean we have to create that kind of an ongoing process here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can just be more firm and disciplined, not let the stakeholders have endless opportunities to require reevaluation. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to just decide and move on.
Mm-hmm. Adam, so the integrated resource plan process and the evaluation is generally not oriented towards a specific resource addition, right?
That's correct.
So with that in mind, this isn't intended to supplant the advanced determination of prudence planning process and application process.
Correct.
Those are the only questions I had. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? No. All right. Thank you, Adam.
Okay. Thank you.
Good job. Thank you, Jack. So we have a couple people in the room. Welcome the next person to come forward. Darcy, come on up. Nat, do we have anyone online? Okay, sounds good. Be sure to let us know if you intend to testify online and we'll add you to the list. Again, you have to call in, right? That's what we said.
That and we're running a few company members are on our private phone bridge.
So they could just speak through that?
Yep.
Okay. Can they raise their hand or something if they want to?
Nope, this one is just open.
Okay. Well, we'll go with Darcy and then we'll see. And then we have one other gentleman in the room. Then we'll probably take it online. Yeah. Hi, Darcy.
Okay, good morning, commissioners. Darcy Nigam with Montana Dakota Utilities. Here in support of the proposed commission rules in Chapter 69-09-12-4. Integrated resource planning and cybersecurity. So we do appreciate the opportunity, you know, that we had to work with staff just through some of their thoughts and also to help harmonize some of our other states and to get some greater clarity on what staff was looking for. So, you know, we do support at least the commission rules as were drafted. And that ends my comments, and I'm open for questions if you have any.
Excellent. Do you have any concerns or input on the issues that we just discussed?
So certainly
process or content?
Yeah, Commissioner Fedorchuk, so just a couple pieces, I think, maybe just on you know, some of the, I think the concerns, I think, or at least questions we had were just on how we kind of harmonize with some of the other states. You know, our other states, when we do an integrated resource plan, besides North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana, you know, South Dakota, we currently file the North Dakota IRP that we have for informational purposes. And so there's no statute requirement we have. It's just it's filed for information. They just put a docket on it, and there's no really proceeding that goes with that. In Montana, we do have a specific IRP process. That's part of the Montana Annotated Code. In that, it's prescriptive, but it's generally in sync with what we do in North Dakota. One of the differences is in Montana, they're required to have written comments prepared by the Department of Environmental Quality, and then the commission does hold a hearing and does provide comments to us or feedback as far as on the resource plan that we developed. And so that was one of the pieces we were interested, at least in this proceeding, and these commission rules was having some sort of comments and feedback, you know, at least at a minimum as far as what we're putting forward, or if there are things the commission would like to see us do different, include, to have that sort of an opportunity to get that feedback. You know, today, you know, we file it, we have a PI meeting, you know, it's has a docket number on it, and we usually don't have any further discussion until it comes to an ADP or a rate case. And so that would be helpful to get some of that feedback as we develop this. And certainly the commission has the flexibility if they wanted to open the investigation, you know, the broader process to look deeper into the resource plan. And I think it has that flexibility, which is good from the commission and the staff if there's not a whole lot in mm-hmm. our resource plan that's occurring kind of in the next, you know, this five-year window, at least to be able to do something kind of on the review sort of light process, I would say, versus something that kind of drags out into something that may be, you know, the 9 months that Adam was talking about. Mm-hmm. And so one of the other questions we did end up having is certainly, you know, to what extent, you know, we talk about transmission as a part of this. So it was good to see it's limited to more of just those general network upgrades if they're known for resource additions. And because we also do have the 10-year plan that we submit as well. At least that gets into more detail of our broader transmission plans where we stay. So either we needed to keep those, you know, pieces separate, which is what's proposed, or some way we have to harmonize those together if we're doing a lot of consideration on transmission planning. And so that was one of the other comments I think that we had worked through. You know, the other one I foresee as we go through this, you know, we did have some discussions, or I did with Adam, just of how we do some of this, you know, extreme weather forecasting, or at least the gas production outages. And so probably at least see, either if it's in the first round of the IRP, is probably getting together with staff and at least saying, here's how we're thinking of doing this. You know, are you kind of in agreement and having a working process? Probably to work through some of the flexibility we may have in implementing some of these requirements. But, you know, all in all, I think, you know, this is very doable for us. Currently in Montana, we are undergoing an update to the commission rules out there for integrated resource plans. And so we're kind of waiting to see how that, you know, comes together. Currently, they did move from a 2 to 3 year cycle. So at least this is helpful if we're on 3, that's what we would go to. Mm-hmm. And if I could get initial plug, you know, I think the last one we filed in North Dakota was July of 2021. So if we could be first on there to get the July of 2024, that would work well for us.
All right.
I think the last thing I had, and I had talked with Jack about this, is, you know, MDU currently has a commission order that we're under in North Dakota, is how we file our integrated resource plans today. And so part of that ends up being, how do we harmonize between what's in that prior commission order and as far as in these rules? And so I think the intent was, in visiting with Jack, that that commission rule would go away once these end up being approved.
The commission order?
That we have to file integrated resource plans every 2 years.
Oh, yep. Sure, yeah.
Provide a little more follow-up to that. All three utilities actually have a commission order for integrated resource planning, so prior to our ordering the new integrated resource plans, we would be revoking any prior orders related to integrated resource planning.
Okay. So in terms of the transmission piece, so the integrated resource plan mostly talks about generation.
Correct.
But the transmission plays such a role in the availability and location of, and the type and everything of the renewables, and most of the utilities are moving towards a lot more renewables. So is it appropriate moving forward to not have more discussion about the transmission components in the IRP?
So currently in our integrated resource plans, Commissioner Fedorchuk, you know, I would expect we would continue to have the broader MISO section, you know, which does talk about MISO issues, and at least on some of those broader, in this case, prior it was the multi-value projects. In this case, the long-range transmission plans, discussions would be included there about that. You know, one of those, it's hard to roll that into an individual resource you may be looking at, other than, you know, part of it, if we get into maybe a bit of a description on a resource type, you know, and what may be needed to actually construct that. But in the end, we're including dollars, you know, in our estimates for future resources that include some sort of adder, if it's for network upgrades, if we know it, or at least on a percent basis of saying, here's what we might expect to include.
So that's baked into the generation consideration.
Into the supply side cost.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, what about the carbon footprint stuff? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think if we go down that path, I think we'd have to look for, you know, some sort of, I would say, broader, you know, industry or national studies that may be produced on that. you know, one of the challenges are sometimes, and just speaking when we talk about, you know, at least maybe one of the most recent wind projects we developed, a lot of times you don't know where your components are coming from. And a lot of that, you don't know some of those end pieces on those footprints until you'd actually have, you know, an order placed, and you end up having, you know, the schedules put together by the supplier that says, here's the country at least your towers or blades may be coming from. You know, there may be something that comes along in the future where there's more disclosure on some of those suppliers, but it's hard to end up saying, here's a particular mine or country that may be contributing to that overall net carbon impact until you actually have the equipment supplied, and if you would get enough information on their supply chain. But I think there's a lot more probably disclosure we'll see as far as from vendors and other companies coming in the future years.
Maybe it's something that North Dakota just develops our own formula for how we, you know, we dig that stuff up and come up with a formula for what should be included as an adder for addressing the, you know, transportation and development costs. So, anyway, okay, curious about that. You guys have anything for Darcy?
No, you asked the question.
Just one. You talked mostly about the IFP thing, or I think entirely. Did you have any concerns about the cybersecurity part of it, or with, you know, open records things, our ability to close a meeting, and you feel comfortable in providing that information to us in a closed meeting, and us being able to keep it secure?
Commissioner Christman, I think that was our preference to do it, and, you know, kind of the example, I think we had our last PI meeting, we had kind of discussions on some of those topics and thought that was a good forum to do that. So I think if we do it that way, it could be much more free-flowing and at least probably have information that we would probably be more easily and readily able to share versus if we had to file it in a report, of which case, you know, it would probably be out of date by the time we actually got to, we got it submitted, or if we actually had a meeting conversation on it. So I think this will work best for us.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's good to hear, Darcy. But I do think it's important that in the free-flowing conversation, the company kind of comes prepared with the items listed in the rules, because it's fairly exhaustive in terms of the things that aren't listed.
It is, and then there's a couple elements to that. One, you know, we get the overall corporation controls, and then there's sort of those controls as well that are part of what we do on the electric industry side.
Again, that's probably one of those processes that'll evolve. All right. Thank you, Darcy. Appreciate you being here. Okay. Another participant in the room.
Hello, commissioners.
Would you mind hitting the green? Thank you. Perfect.
Madam Chairman, Commissioner Fedorchak, Commissioner Christman, and Commissioner Haugenhoffert, I'm John Nagel. I work for Beck Communications as their Chief Security Officer. I also lead the business line, their wholly owned subsidiary, CyberNet Security, by Beck, which provides security services to critical infrastructure, including energy. And I'm here today to provide comments specifically on the cybersecurity rules to the IRP plan, not the other part of the IRP plan. I want to make that very clear. So with that said, I would like to provide just some grounding comments for everybody and then actually provide some recommendations or thoughts back to the commissioners today. When you talk about the power producers and transmission line operators who have to meet NERC SIP requirements, specifically when we talk about the loss of their generation or transmission, it would cause a downstream effect against the stability of the grid. So that's where NERC and FERC focus when you talk about high impact and medium impact. And those that are high impact and medium impact are required to follow SIP 5.0. Low impact, they are not required. So the question today would be, are the utilities that we are speaking about considered low, medium, or high impact within the state of North Dakota. And it's that specific generation facility located here, not the overall utility itself. So the small operators or small transmission providers who cannot meet or cannot cause a cascading effect to the grid, which could harm the grid, they're not subservient to SIP 5.0 as it speaks to cybersecurity. But that said, there is an argument to be made that they should follow it. And we would also recommend that. So if they're not fiscally responsible, they still, almost ethically, should be responsible to provide those type of reports, those type of securities as it relates to their facilities and equipment.
John, could I interrupt
yes.
you just for a second? Could you tell us what is required in the SIP? Starting with, I can guess what SIP stands for, but maybe you can...
So SIP is Critical Infrastructure Protection.
Okay.
And under that, there are a series of rules from 0 to 12 or 13, 002, 004. They all have specificity as to what needs to be done by that specific transmission provider or generator. And they are detailed. They
protect
are also
the security of it.
As far as the as far as cybersecurity goes, SIP also requires that those high and medium impact providers provide a list of their critical assets that they are monitoring and that they are reporting on from a cybersecurity perspective.
And only the high impact ones are required to do this.
Medium also.
Medium and high.
Medium and high. It used to be dependent on the generation capacity in megawatts, in the past, but now it's about the impact that that particular provider would have on the stability of the grid. So you could have a low impact or a lower low impact, but they're at a critical point within our region that could actually cause a cascading effect and mm-hmm. cause impact, whether it would be a brownout, a total blackout, or some other type of impact. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important that they follow those rules. That said, I'm a little bit ahead of myself here. We are in support of the cybersecurity rules that are out there. The testimony today is really to make sure those rules for reporting have the right weight behind them to be effective for the state of North Dakota. So when you talk about the high and medium impact providers, they are required to actually have an audit as it relates to the cybersecurity within their businesses. That audit function is conducted by WEC and MRO. They're funded to do that. If we are here in North Dakota now going to say for low impact, they are not required under those two organizations. We aren't funded to actually provide resources for that audit or to review those reports that are given. So that would be a question here for the state. Are we prepared to actually provide some type of audit function with clear, concise rules for those reports and what we need to see? So somebody would have to actually provide that type of audit function, whether it's within the state, outside the state, but that is not funded today within our state that I know of. The organizations also that are high impact go under mock audits, so they can be prepared for that. I don't know if we do that here on the low side. We don't. It's not required by NERC or FERC. So those are just a couple of the comments I wanted to bring to bear today. And at the end of the day, what we would recommend would be leveraging what NERC already has done. There's no need to reinvent the wheel, but you would probably want to simplify it, make it clear and concise and consistent for the energy providers here. Then you have your framework, which would align upward to NERC SIP 5.0. And if eventually one of those operators or transmission providers becomes a medium to high impact, they would already be aligned and ready to go, which also would be very important.
All right. Is that the conclusion of your prepared stuff?
Just a couple other comments for clarification here. So you also need to compare the year-over-year results of those cybersecurity reports. And what I mean by that is there are going to be identified opportunities, and those opportunities have to be mitigated. Sometimes they can be mitigated in short order. Sometimes it can take a year or more So you want to be able to track that in your reporting. So the timing of your reports, if it's a three-year report that they're providing via an IRP, or is a cybersecurity report going to be a 12-month report? 3 years in cybersecurity is a lifetime. I mean, 3 months can be a lifetime when we talk about what's happening in today's world. The final comment is, you spoke about this cybersecurity report inside, or rules inside the IRP, is relating to investor-owned utilities. The question I would bring up is, maybe that's a great place to start. However, when you talk about lower impact, everybody is connected when it comes to energy. And to exclude others could possibly cause a cyber impact or cyber incident that could relate or intertwine with the others that are required under what you call investor-owned. Because today, most of the utilities use similar equipment types. There's only a few manufacturers of those equipments, especially on the operational technology side. And if there is a virus or a cyber attack on one of those, it can actually proliferate to the others pretty easily. So I think this is a great first start, but I would also recommend that consideration be given, where do you go in the future for other energy and transmission providers here in the state of North Dakota. So that concludes my input today. I appreciate the time and opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, John. A couple questions. First of all, I really appreciate you taking time and zeroing in on these rules. Clarification, these are included with the IRP rules, but they aren't part of them. They're kind of distinct. And so the cybersecurity reports are connected to a requirement in the law that called on the utilities to do this annually with us. It's really separate from the IRP process. However, it sounds to me, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I'm simplifying your overall suggestions and want to see if I'm understanding it correctly. It sort of sounds to me that you're suggesting that we sort of become the NERC for North Dakota for the lower risk resources.
Yes, I am, in a way. At the end of the day, if you're going to have rules which are requirements, what is the impetus or the hammer, so to speak, for compliance? Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, what is the standard of review? Since NERC SIP 5.0 does not apply to the lower side, mm-hmm. or the lower impact, what do you do and how do you manage that? It may be critical to North Dakota, but is it critical on a federal level is another discussion. Mm-hmm. So some entity, or potentially I hate to say we become a NERC or a WEC or an MRO, but we would need some type of auditing review that aligns to what the commission is trying to do here. Mm-hmm.
So I will just say, from my perspective, and being part of the legislative discussions on this, that's a step quite a bit beyond what we envisioned, what the legislature envisioned, and what we, I think, envisioned with what's laid out here. I think we feel that, well, at least I do, and I'm not going to speak for my two colleagues, so I feel like these cyber issues are driven by forces kind of far beyond North Dakota and our expertise, and so we're going to need to lean on those big federal agencies that are looking at this more globally and internationally, and setting standards that are kind of uniform throughout the country and already have the audit and enforcement tools to follow through on things. From our perspective, we envision
internationally and setting standards that are kind
of... Hello, if you're on the public phone, Greg, please mute yourself.
It's echoing.
It's echoing. Okay. So with these rules, we wanted to just provide an opportunity to have a conversation with investor-owned utilities that we do have jurisdiction with, to to do just sort of a check, like, how generally are you approaching this and also making sure that they have the resources to do it, to follow through, but not to be the cybersecurity police for the grid in North Dakota.
So then the question would become, what is the purpose of the annual cyber report? If it is to inform that somebody is doing something or an entity is meeting some standard, what standard is it? Is it aligned to NERC-FERC? That would be great. But what is the purpose of that report for you to act on? What do you do if you see something inside that report that you have a question on? You know, those are things that will come up. I will say this, you have to start somewhere. I think this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have to grow into it and
sure.
lean into it and learn. And there are expertise and businesses out there like ours and others throughout the United States, Canada, and Mexico, which NERC covers. So you can leverage that. So I think it's a fantastic starting point. But to be able to ask the right questions in a closed form, and by the way, that has to be 100%. It is too critical to the individual utilities to expose any potential vulnerabilities, but more importantly, the inside operations of their generation, the technologies generated. You don't want that out in the public sector. It's very easy for somebody to take that and exploit it at that point. So having those as closed meetings is imperative.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that, and you're right. It is kind of a first step. I think the first step is having more routine conversations about it in a closed setting where the information is protected, and we'll have to see where it goes from there. But I do want to make sure that, you know, like, there's an understanding that we don't have an enforcement arm of this right now. There isn't, you know, so it's pretty small and narrow in terms of stimulating a conversation with the utilities that we regulate specifically about this issue, and we can see where it goes from there.
And I think that would be appropriate, but at least be able to ask the right questions of the report is what I would encourage.
Sure.
To be able to read and interpret that report and ask the right questions back as it relates to cybersecurity. So I think it's a great first start. I appreciate the opportunity and grateful to be here. Thank you, Commissioner.
Well,
these
two might
or?
Have others, so.
I'm not sure I grasped it, some of the things you said. So does NERC have each operator labeled as either low, medium, or high impact, and we can look and at the utilities that are in North Dakota and say, oh, this one is medium impact or low or high?
That is correct. Under SIP 5.0, when it relates to cybersecurity, you have to classify yourself. It is a requirement.
Okay.
So you would either be classified as low, medium, or high, so we should be able to look at that here in the state. I do not believe we have any medium or high, but I will easily stand corrected, when our utilities report on that.
And so if they were reclassified to medium or high and had to follow SIP 5.0?
Correct.
Real brief description of what does that mean they have to do then?
There's a series of requirements and regulations, including assets that they have to provide back at the federal level about their cybersecurity program and securing their assets, process, procedures, controls, etc., at a high level. And you would be able to leverage, if that report could be provided to you, that would, in my opinion, satisfy your cyber reporting rule for you that you're putting into place now.
And can a low impact operator just choose to pay a fee or something and have that audit done by WEC or MRO?
I would assume you could pay a fee to have something done, whether it be WEC or MRO. I do not know that today, but I would be willing to check on that for you.
Thank you. Another question?
Now, you said that you don't think any of our utilities are medium or high?
I don't believe, as it relates to cybersecurity, that we have.
I believe there are.
I'm sure they all are. I would be shocked if they weren't all.
I would say that there's. Yeah, there is.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they're the only operators of the grid here, so how would they.
But when we talk about criticality, it's to the overall grid, not just the North Dakota's grid.
But they're connected to the.
Correct.
The whole grid, so.
If they can be replaced here or rerouted here without affecting the stability of the overall grid, then their classification would not be high, I do not believe.
Okay.
So you would have
to... Well, it's a good thing to ask them.
It would be a good thing to ask is how they are classified under SIP 5.0.
Sure.
That'll answer your question.
Right.
Because it's the overall grid itself, in particular to the region which we reside. We just happen to have a demarcation line here, right, of MRO and WEC. We're kind of sitting in the middle here a little bit, mm-hmm. so we have a couple of areas that we would have to ask those questions on.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Other questions, Sheila?
I just want to make a comment. John, I welcome your comments, and I think it's very good. I think there are a lot of electrical companies out there that utilize NERC and some of the requirements of it. I know they're quite extensive, especially when you start out on developing your plans, and some of the requirements are annual, monthly. it's a lot. I can see what your intent is on where to bring us, everyone as a whole, on cybersecurity and the critical infrastructure plan. So I do appreciate it, your comments and the intent of it and where we need to go, especially when the audit, what do we know to ask, and doing a very thorough audit in the question. So I do thank you for your comments.
You're very welcome. And as I conclude here, I think NERC's a great way to actually build a simplified plan for the lower. I mean, it's expensive to conduct these audits. It's expensive to comply to these audits. So if you're in the lower classification, it could be prohibitive. But you could still model a straw man after that to at least try to follow and at least do something on cybersecurity as it aligns to NERC itself.
Well, as you indicated, they have the framework out there. We don't have to reinvent a wheel.
Correct.
People don't have to reinvent
right.
it. The framework is there.
Exactly.
If they want it. Again, thank you for your...
Thank you very much.
John, I have one quick request. If you could write your name down on the sign-in sheet if you haven't already, and then just write the entity that you're with for records, would be appreciated. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. So, well, we can open it up for the online and on the phone. We're on the phone bridge. If anybody is wishing to make comments, let us know, please.
Commissioners, this is Dave Cedarquist. Is it okay if I speak at this time?
Absolutely, Dave. Thank you.
My name is Dave Cedarquist. I'm with Xcel Energy. I'm also on the line from Xcel is Sarah Mandich, our Director of Resource Planning and Bidding. If there are any questions, I'm going to start with just a few brief comments. I'd like to commend staff, first off, for their efforts to involve and engage the utilities in North Dakota early on in the development of these rules. That was very helpful, I think very productive. Our company is optimistic that a more formal review process in North Dakota will provide, more input, lead to some helpful discourse, and in the end, result in more informed plans. So we're looking forward to participating more formally in North Dakota. As we strive to comply with these new rules, we're hopeful, at least in the early going, that the commission and staff will be somewhat flexible in terms of, the content and perhaps even the timing of some of the filings around the plan. I think it's already been touched on a little bit as we kind of first go through the process here in North Dakota. There's going to be some things we're going to find out that might need some flexibility. So, but that said, we're very supportive of the rules, and we look forward to, greater engagement with this commission on this very important planning process. So that concludes my oral comments. The company does plan on submitting some brief written comments as well, but at this time we'll open it up for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Dave. Really appreciate you being here, and maybe we should include an component to the rules that existing utility staff aren't allowed to retire until the first company IRP is completed.
Oh, very, very interesting rule.
I don't know, I think it has some merit.
There's been no motion or second.
So does Excel have concerns about how this process works with your Minnesota process, or how do you envision, because you have a really pretty onerous process through Minnesota, how do you envision this helping or perhaps complicating that? How do they feed each other? How do you see that working out?
So Commissioner, I'll just start by saying you've hit on, yeah, one of the major concerns. As you said, we're already involved in a fairly complex planning process in Minnesota, and so that is sort of one of the reasons why I was appealing for some flexibility. That process in Minnesota can vary in terms of the length of the time that the plan is being reviewed, and the timing can get kind of messed up. So, but that is one of our major concerns. I'm going to let Sarah maybe weigh in as well. She's much more closely involved in that process.
Good morning, Commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, you sound good.
Okay, thank you. So thanks, Dave, for that summary. I agree with everything Dave said. I think, you know, we do file our IRP in other states besides Minnesota for formal consideration now. Michigan also requires us to file it. And they do have a process that sort of accommodates or recognizes the fact that we go through this lengthy process in Minnesota and evaluates and accommodates around that. So I think it's doable. We will reconcile the processes as best we can, but like Dave said, there's some flexibility in that would be helpful given the schedules we meet in other states.
All right. To the extent that our timing can help feed the process in other states or in Minnesota in particular, I think that's worth spending some time working through with staff. So we know we're only a sliver of the system, but we do come at things differently, and it might be helpful to be able to even share, like, here's how North Dakota is looking at this, and Minnesota can say, yeah, well, we think that's stupid, or, oh, maybe that has some merit. So, you know, I just think that there might be some room for that. Randy or Sherry, do you have any questions for Excel?
I think just one. I agree with your concern, Madam Chair, about potential retirements. I think we can leave that in somehow.
Thank you.
Beyond that, are you familiar with, based on the previous witness's discussion, are you familiar with any either low, medium, or high impact rating from NERC for your company and having these cybersecurity audits done?
Commissioner Christman, I'm not probably the right person to talk about that. I'm not sure if Dave has more information, but I think we could probably follow up.
Okay. Yes, no, I too am not able to answer that question. Commissioner, we do have our cybersecurity meeting with the commission. I think it's planned for August. But at this point in time, we'd have to get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
One follow-up on the CO2 question that we were talking about with staff and MDU. Minnesota tracks CO2 reductions. How do you do that there, and what's all contemplated in what you can count, how you count that?
Yeah. Commissioner Fedorchak, that's a great question. So in our current IRP process, we account for the carbon emissions that we calculate are attributable to the customers we serve. So we look at the emissions from our generation and adjust for purchases and sales to the market, and then report that carbon number as sort of what we start with as a baseline and what we are trying to reduce to achieve our 80 by 30 and 100 by 50 goals. I will say that that does not include a life cycle analysis similar to what you had been talking about. However, in our recent Minnesota IRP order, we are required to examine life cycle emissions in our next IRP. And so that is something that we plan to, you know, include in our IRP report. And, you know, we would, I assume, then file it with North Dakota as well. So that is something that we are going to address.
Great. Do you have any idea how you're going to do that?
You know, we're still working through the details of that. I think similar to what the representative from MDU was discussing, that really isn't a methodology that we would be developing ourselves, likely. That is something that we would be consulting with national experts on. I do know that the National Renewable Energy Laboratory has done some studies on that. Agencies have done studies on that. So I think one of the requirements we have is to sort of convene a stakeholder process that discusses that. And so we'll be doing that before our next IRP and then kind of working through how we want to address that question at that time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah. That's good insight. Any other questions for XL?
I have a question or just maybe clarification. Absolutely, we love to work with companies in the flexibility. Are you looking at, if we stay on our three-year cycle, like submitting the plan, and that's if you need to submit additional information or at least submitting an initial plan as requested when your time comes? Because I foresee if we're delayed in submitting the initial plan, then that puts our whole cycle off. Staff isn't reviewing the initial plan.
Yep. Thank you, Commissioner, for that question. Oh, sorry, Dave, did you want to jump in?
No, go ahead, Sarah. Give that a shot.
Okay. So our next IRP in Minnesota is due February of 2024. And so I don't think we've fully worked out, you know, staggering the filing, exactly how that will work between the three IOUs, but I think we would intend to file our North Dakota plan, you know, around the same time as we would file in Minnesota. The IRP process is fairly analytics heavy, and then there's another process of actually writing up the document, and so I think in terms of being efficient in our work process, I think that we sort of try to align the filings as much as possible in that sense.
Jack, maybe you want to provide some insight, because prior to Sherry coming, we kind of talked through an initial process of, because we have some IRPs here right now that we're looking at, correct?
We do, and in fact, we are doing an investigation currently into Otter Tail's integrated resource plan.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Commissioner, may I just ask one question?
Absolutely.
Farah, and I apologize since I should have this down after the number of conversations we've had, but could you just spell out your name for the record so that we can make sure we can provide that in order?
Oh, sure. Yep. My first name is Farah, F as in Frank, A-R-A-H. And my last name is Mandich, M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, D-I-C-H.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Farah. I was calling you Sarah. Now that we're saying Farah, I know who you are.
That's okay.
Your face
hard to tell over the phone.
Your face just popped up as soon as Jack said Farah, I was like, oh, this is Farah. Of course it is. All right. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Okay. Me? Thank you, XL. Appreciate you guys taking time to participate. Anybody else online?
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me?
We can. Is this Nate?
Yep, this is Nathan Jensen with Otter Tail Power Company.
Thanks, Nathan.
I'd just like to offer our comments in support of the proposed rules. Definitely want to appreciate the staff reaching out well in advance, giving us ample opportunity to participate and be involved. And I think it's a great process, and we're looking forward to seeing how it develops. And again, it's just feel like we've been, our opinions have been heard, and the way the rules landed is we're very comfortable with them.
Good.
And with that, I'm willing to answer any questions as well.
Thanks, Nathan. Can you kind of describe your process in Minnesota? I think it might be a little bit different than what XL goes through, but maybe I'm just making that assumption.
Sure, yeah. I think the biggest difference between us and XL is we get far fewer stakeholders that get involved with ours. But from a general sense, it's pretty similar. We're, we file an IRP, and then there's a initial comment period for a few months, which as of late, those 3-month comment periods have been extended multiple times, and it's getting to be a longer process now. And then there is a reply comment period where we have a chance to go through all of the comments filed by stakeholders and provide responses to those. And then there is a window of time where the Minnesota staffers generate briefing papers, followed by a hearing and a written order about a month later. And typically, I think the way the rules are written is, it's an every the 2-year process, but the way it works is it's usually 2 years from the order is when you come back with another IRP. So it will line up pretty nicely with the 3-year schedule that North Dakota is proposing as well.
Excellent. How do you see working through the different goals? Like Minnesota's prescriptions may be quite a bit different than ours. How do you, what kind of concerns or challenges does that create for you?
It definitely doesn't create any new challenges or concerns. I think we've always made it our goal anytime we've been developing we use Minnesota resource plan to make it a system-wide resource plan. Again, our service territory is pretty balanced between the Dakotas and Minnesota, and we've always made it our goal to put forward a resource plan that satisfies all of our commissions, all of our states, and that will be our intention moving forward, too. Even though now North Dakota has their own set of rules, we're still hoping to put forth just one resource plan for our entire system that balances all of the commission's requirements.
Okay. And do you have the requirement in Minnesota to do a life cycle CO2 footprint as well for your next plan?
We have not been given that requirement yet. Again, we have an open IRP right now, and the initial comments got pushed back or due September 12th, and if there are no more delays, we'll likely have a hearing early 2023, and it would be at that point where we would get that requirement.
Very good. Randy or Sherry, do you have any questions for Nathan?
Nathan, are you aware of any either low, medium, or high impact rating from NERC regarding cybersecurity plan audits?
Commissioner Crispin, I'm definitely not the expert. I will say I'm aware, each of our sites has its own rating. Most of our sites are low. We do have a fair number of medium and then very few high. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but we can certainly follow up with you on that if you'd like more detail.
Thank you.
I have no questions.
Okay, staff? No? All right, you got off easy, Nathan.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the time to participate. We appreciate that on the front end of all the utilities working with staff and then today as well, so we can hear from you, and we're looking forward to this process. So thanks so much. Is there anybody else online, Matt?
I don't have a view of this bridge. And last I heard, we don't have anybody called it to the public.
Okay. All right. So with that, with no other people on the bridge and no other public testimony.
Can I ask Darcy a question?
Oh, yeah, Darcy. Why don't you come on back up? So we had some follow-up to you on the cybersecurity stuff.
Based on John's testimony, do you have any comments, or are you familiar with any of the low, medium, and high?
Commissioner Haugenhoffert, I am familiar with the NERC compliance activities for Montana Dakota Utilities. And so as it pertains to the cybersecurity standards, you know, we do have to make a designation based upon the type of facilities we have. Anyone who is a transmission operator, by default, their control room is considered a medium impact facility. And if you have any medium impact facilities that would be generators or transmission facilities, then that control room gets elevated into the high category. So what Montana Dakota Utility does for its cyber controls as it pertains to the electric control system, how we talk to our generators, transmissions, we are classified as high. And so we have all of the standards and requirements that we have to apply to. And so we do have one substation that is considered a medium impact, and that's based on a point count of voltage and transmission lines that come into one substation. And that's the Ellendale 345 substation. Mm-hmm. So in there, we take the same controls we have at the substation or at the control room and apply those out at the substation as well. And so the rest of our facilities all fall under low as far as cybersecurity, but that pertains to how we take care of, you know, access sorts of pieces and incident reporting. But from the standpoint of ensuring facilities don't overtrip, if you had an incident, that's more on the ops and planning side, or you'd end up taking substations, and are there any critical that if you had a loss of one standard, can it cascade? And then there are protections around those as well, or at least the coordination. So one facility can't take down the whole grid unless it was identified in some sort of mitigation, and we don't have any of those.
All right.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? That was pretty deep, Darcy. So does that mean you have to do the audits that Mr. Nagel was talking about?
We do. So as a transmission operator, we do have every 3 years that we do have an on-site audit. So ours is actually going on right now. And so that'll be completed here in the month of June. And then throughout the years, the three-year cycle, we actually have quarterly guided self-certifications that we have to do with the Midwest Reliability Organization, or the MRO. So we're continually going through updates and getting audited on various standards and requirements.
And so that audit report would probably be a part of your cybersecurity report.
We could talk about that. Yes.
Well, the reporting is very detailed. I mean, the grid that they bring out as far as the inspections or the reporting or the auditing is very detailed.
Correct. So, yes. So there are a lot of policies, procedures, and evidence that we have to mm-hmm. keep just to show that we're in compliance with all the standards and requirements. Mm. And I think our position as far as, like I said, any transmission operator, which would be all of the investor owns, and the state would all have those same sort of equal designations.
Yeah. Yep. Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for that additional information.
Thanks, Darcy. All right. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Hearing none, I will now close the hearing on case number PU-22-163. All of the comments provided in writing through the close of business on June 16th will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rules due to the Commission's review of documents or comments received or the Commission's discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open till June 16th, and this hearing is closed. Thanks, everybody.